You're listening to Panel Borders. I'm Alex Fitch, and this is Resonance FM's weekly show about the world of comic books. Today, I'm concluding my talk with John McCrea, an artist who has drawn comic strips all over the world, from Britain to America and now Saudi Arabia. I started my conversation with John in last week's show, talking to him about working with his frequent collaborator Garth Ennis, who wrote the comic Hitman, which John drew for 5 years and is set in Batman's Gotham City. To start off today's interview, I'm asking him about the pleasure of working with established characters. As today's interview was recorded in the busy dealer's room of the Bristol International Comics Expo, you're going to have to allow for the background noise.
I mean, in a way, was it kind of fun working in that sandpit with other people's toys?
Oh God, absolutely, it always is. I mean, I'm a huge, you know, DC and Marvel fan, and I'm only ecstatic every time I get to play with, you know, whoever, Jack Kirby or Siegel and Schuster's toys, you know, fantastic. It's the best thing, really. Garth is a lot more, how shall I put it? He's not so keen on superheroes as I am. He has one or two. He really likes Superman, which I always find odd, but in issue 34 of Hitman, he treated Superman really very respectfully. It was an excellent little story and won an Eisner for it. But sometimes he steps over the mark a little for me. So, we did a Punisher 5-issue arc with Spider-Man and Wolverine in it, and he really just raked them across the coals, and I just thought it was too much. I mean, Spider-Man was just not Spider-Man as far as I was concerned. Still drew it, you know, but I sort of thought, oh God, this is really not Spider-Man. It's just some geek in a Spider-Man costume sort of vaguely simulating Spider-Man. So, you know, but fair play, you know, that's what Marvel wanted, and that's what Garth wanted. And I just pushed the pencil around the page and drew the pretty pictures. So, you know, at the end of the day. So that was that. But yeah, I mean, I always find it great fun. And there's a billion Marvel and DC characters I'd still like to draw if I got the chance.
Top of the list?
Oh,
sorry, I put you on the spotlight
no,
there.
Oh God. Pretty much every DC character created up till 1980.
Right.
You know, I'd love to Silver Surfer. God, I'd love to draw the Silver Surfer and Galactus and the FF, I guess, and them all, really. Power Man and Iron Fist and Jesus. I'm just a huge Marvel geekazoid. I really would love to draw all of those characters. So, but I've been sort of slowly trying to make my style a little bit more Marvel friendly with the work I've been doing recently. So who knows, maybe in the future. But at the moment I'm doing what I'm doing, which is a book for the Middle Eastern audience, our market, and basically I'm happy doing that at the moment. It's the X-Men for the Middle East, so pays great, looks nice, it's fun to draw, so I'm happy enough.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I talked to Steve Yowell briefly about that. I mean, how did this whole Middle Eastern comics company come about?
It was set up by a guy called Knife, and he's basically a doctor and a psychotherapist, I believe, and he treated a lot of people from the scars of sort of various wars and terrorist problems that have been going on. And he's seen and treated a lot, and he's a comic fan from when he was a kid, and he saw comics as a good way of giving people, generally young males, more positive role models. And so he set up his company basically to give young men role models, and he figured what's the best way to do that, and it's just to give them an X-Men comic, basically. Yeah. And because that's the most popular American Western comic, so he kind of tried to emulate that. He's got the guys writing it, Fabian Nicieza, used to write the X-Men. He's got me drawing it. It doesn't work. But anyway, but yeah, nearly. Yeah. I did draw Wolverine, I guess. So he's basically, it is an X-Men book for the Middle Eastern market. I don't think there's anybody makes any bones about that. You know, it sort of wears its influences on its sleeve, really. So, there you go.
Well, I mean, you know, considering how a few years ago Marvel were courting Spider-Man India, Spider-Man Japan. I mean, it seems reasonable that there should be a cultural exchange in the opposite direction as well.
Yeah, it's nice to think that, you know, it's not all just coming straight over, but, you know, some of us are going over the Middle East. Trouble with the Middle Eastern market is there is really very little, and what works to my advantage is there's very little culture of drawing, and I think there's absolutely no comics in the Middle East. Up until Tashkeel have come along, there have been none.
Not even imports?
Not that I'm aware. Tashkeel are reprinting a lot of the Marvel and DC. As far as I'm aware, there was no distributor base for them to work with. They had to create the entire distribution network for their comics as well. I don't know about outlets and things. I mean, it must have been a bloody nightmare, a headache to do, but, you know, they seem to be, it seems to be building and working, and they're getting more outlets, and they do want it to be a global thing, not just Middle East. Apparently it is due to be published and reprinted in the States in October of 07, so, you know, hold on to your hats, true believers. You won't want to miss this one.
I mean, I haven't looked up your biography on the net, so I don't know what part of Ireland you grew up in, but what was your experience of buying comics as a kid?
Oh, my mum and dad bought me, I'm from Belfast,
right.
My mum and dad bought me my first comic when I was 4 years old, and I was hooked from that minute. You know, it was Avengers number 5, I believe, and every year I was just going out on my bicycle and just finding comics wherever I could. Distribution was lousy, absolutely bloody awful. But like most people I've talked to over the years, I went to Port Rush, which was a seaside town, and I stayed in a caravan. And the way the distribution worked, when all the comics that hadn't sold were gathered up into a big warehouse and then shipped out to the seaside towns, where they knew that in the summer all the kids were going to be. And so it was like, it was Mecca. You know, I'd just go there and it would just be filled with Marvel and DC comics. And I spent all my time over those summer months, those hazy, glorious summer months, trolling the comic shops of, you know, of Port Rush, just buying whatever I could fucking afford. Just like, give me the more comics. And I just got the fondest memories. I remember Des did a little bit in Comics International, a little column intro about him and his seaside town when he was a kid picking up Green Lantern and things like that. And I was just going, yeah, it's so true. That's exactly the way it was with me. And I believe with so many people, you know, going to those seaside towns and just getting the sand in your feet and the comics in your hand and the ice cream. And it's just like, how could you not love comics forever after that? So, yeah, that was what cemented it all for me. I'm getting a bit misty eyes now, I'm thinking about it.
Going in the opposite direction, I mean, becoming a comics creator obviously kind of fulfilled some of those childhood dreams, but at the same time, the scripts you've worked from Garth and the kind of comics that he writes in general, he's tackled a lot of political issues, including the Troubles.
Sure, absolutely. Well, I mean, Troubled Souls came about because Garth was in the same year as my brother at school. We went to the same school. He was a couple of years below me. And then I opened a comic shop in Belfast, and he used to come in and buy his comics off me. And Garth was always coming in and saying, I've got an idea for this and an idea for that. What do you think? We'd team up. Because he knew I was starting to break into comics at that time. I just started getting jobs with Action, with British Marvel and such like. And I was just like, yeah, sure, whatever. And I thought nothing of it. And the next thing I knew, because Crisis was out at the time, that political comic that Fleetway were putting out, Crisis was out, it wasn't doing very well, and they needed something new and fresh. And Garth said, what about we pitch this idea for a story? And they just couldn't believe their friggin' luck. You know, they were just like, oh my God, two young boys from Belfast doing a story about the Troubles. I think that'll work. And flew us over. They had bets on that Garth couldn't. He'd done a synopsis and they thought the synopsis was great, but they reckoned he'll never be able to write a script. So they asked him to write a script and bring it over, and they had bets that it was going to be bollocks, and it turned out to be fab, and they were just like, oh my God, this is it. And they flew us over, and we just convinced them that we could do it, the fools. And I they asked me if I could paint 96 pages of full color artwork, and I had never painted anything in my life before. So I went down and drew pencils, you know, I never painted. And I was like, yes, yes, no problems, and went home and just learned on the job. And you can see when you look at Trouble Souls. But yeah, I mean, I had no problem working. I mean, I'm not particularly a political person, but I guess growing up in Northern Ireland, you know, you say that, but there's going to be some, you know, you're going to have some sort of fallback from the Troubles and living through that, through those times. But, you know, I didn't really care what I was doing as long as I was doing comics at the end of the day. Be it political comics, be it superhero comics, be it slice of life comics, humor comics, romance comics. I just love comics. So, and comics can tell any story, so whatever the hell, bring it on. So, yeah, Garth and I realized pretty quickly that do a one political comic for that, and then diversify and do Troubled Souls for a few Troubles more, and after that Dicks, and just take the piss out of it a bit and show people that it's not all about, you know, just because you live in Belfast doesn't mean you're thinking about bombs and bullets every minute of the day. There's people who just go around and do the thing, and sorry, I just got to look at that girl there. She's very, very nice. And then
I'm saying this isn't a video podcast.
Yeah, it's like, but yeah. What was I saying?
I think you actually answered the question. I mean,
there's a bit of drool running down the side of my mouth.
My day job is at the Imperial War Museum.
Oh,
and
hi.
They showed a documentary a couple of months ago, actually, about the murals.
Oh, yes.
And that was like a revelation to me, because I hadn't heard that there was this, you know, very public art form.
Sure, sure.
That combined art and text, and is kind of like a non-violent protest on the streets, you know.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, it's... in general... generally, it tended to be that the Catholic murals were just a shitload better than the Protestant murals. I don't know why that is. Catholics just were good at drawing, I guess. The prods were
all those icons.
Yeah, I don't know. You always get... Garth and I have often taken the piss out of the really terrible King Billy murals that you would see around the place by drawing murals and with terrible horses with six legs and things like that, you know. But yeah, I mean, a very big part of the culture. And I mean, I was over in Derry recently, down by the Bogside, and all the murals around there at a convention, and a lot of the guys who'd come over were seeing these for the first time. And, you know, for me it's just like, hey, yeah, you know, there's the murals. And for them it was like, wow, can we have a tour of this? So yeah, it's all a very important bit of it. And I suppose, but the biggest area near me where I grew up, down by the docks, D Street area, has just been razed completely recently. I was back over when I was over for the Derry convention. I went back to Belfast, and it's just a friggin' wasteland, and all those murals that were there are just gone. And it's all, you know, the peace process kicked in. Paisley and McGuinness are hand in hand,
yeah.
And everybody's loving each other. So it's, but goodbye to the murals and goodbye to that. And, you know, that's good in a way, but it's a shame that every, you know, I just hope they don't wipe out everything and just forget everything, because people have a habit of doing that, of going, let's just demolish everything. And Derry, at the moment, they're pulling down all the big Outlook posts. There's six of them around the walls, and they're in the process of demolishing them. And they shouldn't demolish them all. They should at least leave one as a testament to what went on. But the property is probably worth a fucking fortune, so they'll probably whip them all down, stick up Luxartments. So, you know, fucking hell. Anyway, there you go. So, did that answer the question? I've forgotten what it was.
Next week, Duncan Knott and myself are talking to David Hine and Fraser Irving, a writer and artist who have worked together recently on the Marvel Comics miniseries Silent War, and separately on such titles as X-Men, Spawn, Shaun of the Dead, and Guttsville. In other comics news, The Observer has launched a competition to find new comics artists and writers, so if you think you can create a short story in the next 2 weeks using pictures, word balloons, and captions that fits on a single page of A4, visit www.randomhouse.co.uk/graphicnovels. If you'd like to know more about today's show and download the podcast of the start of my interview with John, please visit www.panelborders.com, and Panel Borders will be back at the same time next week.